Welcome back to Ed Says here on The Talk of Connecticut. In just a moment, we will be joined by Professor Alan Sachs from University of Texas at Arlington. He's a political science professor, and he will be discussing President Trump speaking with Putin. Meanwhile, we were discussing the travel ban as well. Mitch McConnell with his no spine, saying the courts will decide, and saying if they're looking to tighten the vetting process, I mean, who would be against that? But I'm opposed to a religious test. Well, considering you were giving preferential treatment to Christians, I would say that it is a religious test, but that is just me. So McConnell, wishy-washy on the whole thing, and tightening a process which I described to you, which is not easy, is long and can take up to 2 years. Meanwhile, four federal courts have objected to the executive order. New York City said there will be a substantial and irreparable injury to refugees, visa holders, and other individuals. Seattle, Washington, Alexandria, Virginia, and Boston, Massachusetts. In Boston, the citizens there protested in Copley, which was full, which they noted was right near where the marathon bombing happened. The two individuals who were involved in that, their home country not listed on the ban. 888-574-2723 is the number. After I speak with Professor Alan Sachs, I look forward to your calls on the ban and whatever else you want to talk about, as John McCain and Lindsey Graham actually have criticized the ban. Meanwhile, the rest of them, spineless, as they have nothing to say. McCain and Graham in a joint statement saying fear this will become a self-inflicted wound in the fight against terrorism. Jihadist groups hailing this travel ban as a victory. And it's as though some people don't learn from their history. Joining us now is Professor Alan Sachs, University of Texas at Arlington, political science professor. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good morning, sir. It's been a wild, wild weekend.
So let's start with what this was established on, and then I'm sure we'll move along. The president speaking with Vladimir Putin over the weekend. How did that conversation go, do you imagine?
We don't know. The text of it has not been released, but it was criticized before it was even made because a lot of people say that President Trump getting a little bit too close to Russia. However, other people say, well, that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing because historically, even at the height of the Cold War many years ago, when both countries had nuclear-armed missiles aimed at each other, and maybe still do, they wanted to get closer to one another. There were meetings, there were summits, nuclear agreements, trade agreements, and there was a word that was very fashionable during the Cold War when the then Soviet Union was intact. It was called détente. And now President Trump wants to get closer to Russia in many ways, I think especially in fighting Islamic terror. That is what the two countries, I think, see eye to eye with. But a lot of people are still saying, yeah, but Vladimir Putin cannot be trusted. He must be punished for his invasion of the Ukraine, and on. But I think that probably President Trump and Vladimir Putin will have a bigger meeting, maybe even a summit, sometime in the future, where a lot of these things can be resolved.
I think a couple of these concerns include Trump's ties to a Russian business as well, and perhaps promises made to people that now hold positions within the Trump administration. I think it's a little more than just Russians bad, Americans good.
Well, there were ties, but if you're an international businessman like Donald Trump has been, inevitably there's going to be contact with many countries around the world. The new Secretary of State, Mr. Tillerson from ExxonMobil, made a lot of deals with Russia, or at least a couple of major deals with Russia, in regard to oil and gas. And some people say that's not a bad thing, it's a good thing. You got to know these people, and it certainly does not give away our sovereignty when various people were making deals for their companies that obviously might be tailored a little bit differently now that they've become a part of the administration. But we're going to hear that bandied around, I think, for a while. But Russia and the United States, I think, do have some common agreements on Islamic terrorism.
And I don't think that's a bad thing, but what I do think is bad is when somebody who gets a position is exactly what you described, where they had those close ties because of business relations. That doesn't necessarily work on a diplomatic level. Just because you know someone doesn't mean you can transition from one way to the other. And I think what a lot of people are concerned about are the lifting of the sanctions that were placed for that essentially invasion, and the regulations being lifted that would allow ExxonMobil to perhaps go places they couldn't go before. And that just seems like a conflict of interest to a lot of people.
Well, the sanctions are still in place, but I don't believe, it's just my own feeling, that because of these ties to Russia in regard to business deals, that it's really going to compromise our foreign policy much. There's so many things that go into this. I'm thinking of Saudi Arabia, moving to another issue. Why wasn't Saudi Arabia included in this stopping of immigrants coming into American airports over the weekend? Saudi Arabia and Pakistan were not included. Well, was it business deals that did that? Was it the fact that oil companies need their oil and money from Saudi Arabia? Or was it something very different in regard to Saudi Arabia perhaps giving us big information, helping us in the war against terror? So all those things must be taken into consideration. However, I don't think American foreign policy is going to be held hostage to a few people that may have made business deals and now they're in the Trump administration.
Well, I mean, one of those people who made business deals is Trump himself. During 16 months of his campaign, he registered as many as 8 new businesses in Saudi Arabia. Does that not raise a flag for why maybe they didn't make the list?
I think there's all kinds of compromises that could be made. The Bush family, for many, many years, had very strong ties to Saudi Arabia as well. They were great friends with the Saudi ambassador to the United States, but so was President Carter. His name was Bandar, Prince Bandar. Very close ties.
Well, I think there's ties. I think there's ties. Hold on, Professor. I hate to interrupt, but I think that ties and friendships are different from businesses in new ones. 8 new ones in 16 months. He has a vested interest, and he hasn't removed himself, as he said he would, from the business practices.
Well, what do we do then? Tell the members of the new cabinet we can't confirm you. Probably anybody that is going to be chosen, not anybody, but certainly a lot of them who have major business ties are going to have some kind of a compromise. That's been true of past administrations. It's true at the present time. In fact, I would argue that maybe friendships maybe are more of a tie than in a business relationship that maybe can be undone. But a close friendship, a close alliance, President Obama had that with other countries and with people. So these things have to be considered, but I'm not sure what people want President Trump to do, just abandon all contact with Russia because of this.
Well, it's just curious that Saudi Arabia,
at the present time, and hope that he's a patriotic American, and I believe he is, and will push business interests to the side in favor of something to the nation's benefit.
Well, it's just curious that Saudi Arabia didn't make that list, considering 11 of the hijackers Saudis. And
that's been an issue that has come up all the way back to 9/11. Why did we go after Afghanistan? Of course, that's where Al-Qaeda was and where the Taliban was. But Saudi Arabia has had a huge hand in spreading Islamic terrorism throughout the world, through Wahhabism and Islamic militancy. And yet we didn't go after Saudi Arabia. In fact, I believe at the end of President Bush's administration, George W. Bush, we even increased the number of Saudi students coming here under the idea that they would be Americanized, they'd become more Western oriented, and some people, and that may be true. It's difficult to know, but Saudi Arabia's always been a very special case, maybe wrongly.
Yeah, I think it comes down to one thing. No matter who's in control, and it's oil and money. Well, so I guess that's two things.
Oil and money is always a deal, and this issue of Saudi Arabia came up, as you might know, very much after 9/11, when Saudi Arabia was sort of left blameless out there, although the hijackers came from there. But Saudi Arabia spread Islamic terror over the world. We hope it's a different Saudi Arabia today. Rudolph Giuliani said that the other day on a program. It's a different Saudi Arabia. One hopes that he's true. I'm not so confident.
Professor Alan Sachs, always a pleasure to speak with you. Have a wonderful afternoon.
Oh, thank you, sir. It's greatly appreciated.
888-574-2723, the number into the studio. One thing that I wrote down while I was speaking with the professor was that friendship over business. A business is probably better over a friendship. I would argue, though, that Singh, as our president, has, and you can take this as an insult, but he really has no friends to speak of. He has business associates and maybe hangers-on, but there's no real friends when you look at it. I would say he values money more, which would make a business relationship all that more dangerous for the American people. 888-574-2723. That is the number into the studio. Open phones up next. Anything you want to talk about. We've been focusing a lot on the Muslim ban, the travel ban, whatever you want to call it. And because that is the headlines, but there are breaking headlines, including Donald Trump wants to sign an executive order this morning that would require for every one new regulation, two regulations have to be revoked. And how silly that is, because regulations are typically written as one thing, and they might play into other things, but it's not like the regulation is six paragraphs long saying this, 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 and this. But this is the world we live in now. Our nation is being run by Simpleton. We'll be right back here on Ed Says. Welcome back to Ed Says here on the Talk of Connecticut. Just talked with Professor Alan Sachs about President Trump's discussions with Putin, the travel ban, and more. As there are lawsuits flying, the ACLU seeing record numbers, 24 million, the last number I saw. I mentioned that I have signed up for a $20 a month donation. I had a listener email me, said they have done the same thing. And the thought here is that just seeing something wrong, this isn't partisan. When you hear somebody getting preferential treatment, that is the problem. I don't care who it is getting the preferential treatment, but when Donald Trump says, Christians are being oppressed, and then dramatizes it as well, it's not about who's suffering more. It's about people suffering, and it's about America being America. And the idea here is that not only what did this just drop, nobody else knew about it. It was just like, here's the executive order, make it happen. There were people and agencies that should have been informed of it that weren't. And the problem is, that's you have to communicate. All of you that were out there screaming, oh no, Obama's going to become a dictator for life. Well, you're seeing those actions that you feared. Who drops an executive order on a Friday banning people who are traveling or preparing to travel? In the United States and overseas, refugees approved for resettlement in the United States, permanent residents holding green cards and others were turned away from flights, detained, and in some cases, deported. Now they're saying green card, you'll be fine. But that didn't happen to everybody. It's not how it worked. There were attorneys out there handing out phone numbers, working pro bono to help people. Our very own Attorney General, George Jepson, is leading challenges against these policies. This is a battle that will be fought. Meanwhile, with all the chaos, with all the protests around the nation, an unnamed White House official, because it was on a conference call, so I guess they didn't give their name because they didn't want this attributed to them, says it's really a massive success story. Yes. And going on to blame the media and their false, misleading, inaccurate, hyperventilating, fractional, marginal, and minuscule percentage of the coverage that those small amount of people were set aside for further questioning for a couple hours. One of those people asked, do you love your country? This administration official said it's a really massive success story in terms of implementation on every single level. It wasn't. Like, that you can't make up your own rules. It put federal agencies at odds with each other because the courts stepped in. And then you got the Border Patrol. And you got the Department of Homeland Security. And you got the marshals who are supposed to enforce the court order. Like, this is setting up for a battle. It's a constitutional crisis. Oh, and for the record, I wonder if, let's go to whitehouse.gov. Let's see if they put it back up there. How many of you remember your civics class? How many branches of government are there? Let's go to the White House website. Let's click here. 1600 Penn. Oh, they put it back. They put it back. The judicial branch had been removed from whitehouse.gov. Now, I don't necessarily think it is a conspiracy theory here. But earlier this morning, it only read the executive and the legislative and skipped the judicial. Now, if you're updating it, you can keep the old one there until you update. But it was pulled down entirely, not only just the page, but it was removed from the drop-down menu. And that's just not how you, it's not how you update a website. But this administration doesn't seem to be able to do anything right. And that is not a partisan, take. Like, just look at how this was rolled out. To call it, successful isn't correct because people were confused. People were lost. People were detained. And then look in, I think it was Seattle where, protesters, a guy protesting did nothing, was shoved by an officer and then pepper sprayed and arrested. Like, that's not how any of this should work. Let's go to Frank in Watertown. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, Dad. Look, I was listening to the latest poll. 66% of the people believe that we should have extreme vetting. And all I see on the news is how much the protesters are protesting all over the country. But 66% of the people on polls.
Which poll is this? Where'd you poll?
I think it was, I couldn't swear to it, it was on Fox. I think it was a Quinnipiac poll, 66%. That's a lot.
I will have my producer see if we can find those numbers, because I haven't seen anything like that. The number I do have is the 50% of Americans who disapprove of Donald Trump, a task he succeeded in doing in 8 days, which is an incredible number compared to every president that came before him.
Well, if you mention Trump's name, you're going to get a negative on it anyway. But this was the policy as far as the extreme betting. It was 66% in favor.
Well, again, I'll see if I can find those stats. But here's the thing. What is extreme vetting? The vetting we already do is a two-year process, pretty much. How much more extreme do you have to do? As I mentioned, the story of a guy who talks to four or five federal agencies in different interviews, and as he described it, they know more about him than his friends and family. How much more extreme does it have to be? It's already an extreme process.
I think that they're not worried too much about the people that work in Iraq or work with our army and they got green cards. They're worried more about the refugees and trying to sneak the people in that way. And I think that's where they need the extreme vetting. As far as these people that got green cards, man, you got to cut them a little slack. But they turn three or four people back and send them back overseas. They must have been bad dudes.
See, I don't think they were. I think that it was just policy, and the policy is confusing because it was rolled out on a Friday with no input from any other agencies, including those who were supposed to read executive orders. They didn't even—it's like they didn't even run it past legal. Thank you for the call, Frank. I got to take a break. We'll be right back here on Ed Says. Welcome back to Ed Says here on the Talk of Connecticut. That is the number into the studio. I tried to find the poll that we were talking about a moment ago, and the only thing we could come up with was a poll from Denver Post. .com. So I don't trust online polls like that just because, and it's not because of the result, it's because of how you can brigade a poll like that, how people can go, hey, let's vote on this multiple times. I would rather see something from Quinnipiac in regards to the support for the extreme vetting. As my previous caller said, put it at 65%. I would argue that it's probably not the case considering Trump's disapproval rating has now hit 50%, which only took him 8 days, whereas I think the lowest one, I don't have the numbers in front of me because it's in my stack of paper here, but I think it was either Reagan or Clinton who did it faster, and they were in the hundreds of days, I think at least 500 days, and in 8 days he hit that number. because people are concerned about it. And they put out a statement, which I'm sure he didn't write. He mentions the policy that others did in the past when he talks about President Obama and Jimmy Carter, except that's not the case. One was for a terror reason. The other, oh, he didn't mention Carter, just mentioned Obama, because why would he? The other was a hostage situation. And he says, this is not a Muslim ban. It's not about religion. This is about terror and keeping our country safe. And saying that these will be reviewed. And he has a tremendous feeling. Like, he's got like six words that he can use. And again, statistically, the chances of this happening are one in the billions. And then the other problem is that the people who are most concerned about it are the people that it will not happen to. When you see these attacks happen, they happen in places that are large populations. Typically, when you look at where something has happened, it's always, you have New York, you have Boston, you have California. They're liberal strongholds. The conservative side in the middle of the country clutching their pearls are probably the safest from it. And the fact remains is that the crimes committed by asylum seekers, refugees, are nil compared to those committed by people who are either American or came here. Crime can be committed by anyone at any time. But if a Muslim does a crime motivated by religion, it is Muslim terrorism. But if Dylann Roof, who was motivated by white supremacy, he's sick. You know, he's mentally ill. And you can't split hairs like that. It either goes one way or the other. Meanwhile, as I mentioned, this will hurt businesses. Google creating a $4 million crisis fund, as the company has had strong objections to it. Apple, Microsoft, Netflix, Airbnb, Tesla, all denouncing the policy. As it could disrupt businesses, these tech businesses who rely heavily on foreign-born workers. And Google saying it affects at least 187 of the staff for them. So for those of you who think it's not going to affect anyone but terrorists, that is not the case. This fear of Muslims is as irrational as my hatred of Philadelphia Eagles fans. Because of my experience with a few bad ones. I project that upon the entire city, nay, the entire state of Pennsylvania, not just the city of Philadelphia. I look down my nose at that state because of the actions of a few bad Eagles fans. Ones willing to travel from Philly to D.C. for a game. I recognize it as irrational and silly. But some of you, for whatever reason, can't reconcile that your fear of people fleeing war-torn countries because you think they're actually here, as someone said, a Trojan horse, a sleeper cell, that they will all be activated one day to turn against us. All this is doing is serving to perpetuate that. Let's go to Tim in Hamden. Good morning, Tim. What do you have to say this morning?
Good morning. Well, first off, I did want to talk about the get rid of two regulations for everyone.
Oh, yes.
But first, I keep hearing this commercial saying that, you know, that the people who go into the media are socialist and all sorts of violent people and stuff. So which are you? You know.
Right. He's not the one. Now, so that's Michael Savage. And yeah. In his promo, he's saying, yes, everybody who goes in the media is terrible, parasitic, and anti-American, except for him. But that's why I went into it. Tim, don't you know I went into this to destroy America from the inside? I am a secret Muslim, and I am perpetuating these ideas.
You were probably born in Kenya, too, also. That's why we never see too many pictures of you.
Yes, I am actually an African-American man born in Kenya who's a secret Muslim trying to undo America.
Well, so if you have no experience, sorry, there was a slight feedback on the phone. If you have no experience in government, you know, it's easier to put out kind of bumper sticker things and saying, for every one regulation, we're going to repeal two. And I've heard this, you know, in political circles for, I don't know, 20 years. You know, it's usually, at, you know, the local yokels at the, up at the State House who, you know, talk about, you know, Connecticut is so terrible. For every thing we pass, we need to, you know, cut all this sort of stuff. So, you know, where are these regulations going to be? Are they going to be in, I don't know, the nuclear safety programs that, things to protect our military, the regulations for fighter jets and for other missiles? How about food safety? You know, we have an awful lot of people that, you know, say, you know, let's just put whatever the market will allow out there as far as, you know. Well, first off, we're not going to get any more things from Mexico. There'll be all be tremendously jacked up in price. We'll be paying $5 for avocados, I guess, soon. So is this what we've come to? And I just hear so many people that are ready to absolutely, you know, defend Donald Trump at whatever. You know, he has the plan. We should give him opportunities, you know, to destroy this country as quickly as possible. Just give him a chance, Ed.
And here's the thing. If it's that great, stop putting it in executive order and start putting it towards the other branches of government, because there are three branches. And everybody who cried wolf about Obama's executive orders don't seem too worried about these.
Well, I mean, you've got, you know, such liberals as Lindsey Graham and John McCain and others saying, you know, this idea of, you know, torture, we're going to bring back, you know, extreme torture. Everything's extreme.
It's like the 90s.
The best we can possibly do, you know.
Well, that's what Trump deals in. He deals in absolutes. Everything's the best or the worst. And that's not a way to go through life. Life is more nuanced than that.
Well, we certainly saw that. You know, I had the opportunity to go to Atlantic City to see his casinos, and you could tell right away why they were going to fail. It was all, you know, glitzy kind of stuff that just didn't make you feel at home, that you want, oh, I want to spend some money here, be very entertained. You know, the only man I know who really could lose money at a casino. Absolutely.
Well, Tim, I thank you for the call. 888-574-2723. I want you people to think about that. Like, he failed at casinos multiple times. And the thing that this whole ban, travel ban, Muslim ban, whatever you want to call it, executive order, is covering that you should think about is that Steve Bannon, the advisor, just an advisor to Donald Trump, chief strategist, and former head of Breitbart News, which some of you are like, yeah, but let's be honest. If you're going to be honest about it, it is a far-right website, alt-right, some might even say, and that's not what we need. We need balance in here. He is now on the National Security Council. That should bother you. That was established in 1947, so he has the best possible advice from his cabinet, military intelligence community, before making decisions. And then once those decisions are made, it's there to make sure everything is implemented. It's been described as the central nervous system of U.S. foreign policy and national security apparatus. Now, he removed the highest-ranking military officer in the United States, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the director of national intelligence. Previously, those positions, or their equivalent, held permanent positions. Now, they will only be invited when their expertise is needed. I want you to think about that. The Director of National Intelligence and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff will not be on the National Security Council unless invited, but Steve Bannon, a guy who ran a website of fake news and I think had 7 years Navy experience, and that's about it. What else did he do? Was he in banking? Who knows? But now he's got a permanent seat. How does that even make sense to anyone? And there are those calling it dangerous. This is a president with no national security experience. no experience of any kind, of anything related to this, and so long to the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the Director of National Intelligence. But defend that, please. The idea that this is happening should trouble you. And if it isn't, you're not seeing... This is a wholesale change to the way things work. And this is what this administration is all about with the executive orders and with ignoring court rulings, is undoing what this nation represents and how it operates. And he doesn't even seem to care. Trump does this with the swipe of a pen, and some of you applaud it. But taking advice from people in the know is important, not replacing them with somebody who's just going to tell you what you want. But this seems to be Bannon's White House, because the rumor is that this travel ban came from him. And the question is, why are you accepting it? Department of Homeland Security, they have an issue with all this. The judicial branch has problems with all this. There's lawsuits to follow. And I think that's what the travel ban was released at the time it was, to cover the idea that Bannon will have this seat. And it should worry everyone. 888-574-2723, the number into the studio. Meanwhile, the world looking at us and shaking their heads. Iran calling it insulting. Sudan taking issue with it. Yemen saying it's not justified. Our allies saying it's shameful and cruel. That comes from Britain, Germany. Says it in no way justifies a general suspicion against people of certain beliefs. And the list goes on and on. When you take a stand like this, when you do something that is so roundly denounced, you will find yourself standing alone. And we cannot exist that way. This mirrors the border wall, in that we are not an island. We cannot operate on our own. And the idea that we can is foolish and dangerous. And those of you applauding this are just clapping your way to the erosion of what America stands for. Welcome back to Ed Says. One American commando killed, three others wounded in a firefight early Sunday with Al-Qaeda militants in central Yemen as members of Navy SEAL Team 6 carried out a surprise attack that killed 14 Al-Qaeda fighters during an hour-long battle. After initially denying there were any civilian casualties, American officials were assessing reports that women and children had died in the attack. The number I were able to find, 30 civilians killed, including 10 women and children. And I bring that part up because you are talking about a president who advocates for the return of torture and talks about going after terrorists' families. So killed in this raid was one U.S. commando and an 8-year-old girl, among others. 888-574-2723. Meanwhile, I mentioned businesses are fighting back against the ban as Starbucks pledges to hire 10,000 refugees. And other businesses, I believe some of them, I believe the taxi cabs weren't picking up at airports. And it will continue, and we'll see the challenges in court. Meanwhile, here in Hartford, a lack of applicants who are qualified has made it so the city police force cannot add new members, or has at least forced a delay. And this issue has been one Luke Bronin has been dealing with for about a year. His budget promised a class of 45 recruits by September 2016, followed by one in May of this year of 25. But it is smaller than expected, as they are having a hard time finding qualified people. And they deliberately chose to delay the adding of more officers, as there are no qualified applicants or a shortage of. Bronin saying the delay in bringing these classes was a decision made more because of our dissatisfaction with the recruitment process. They want to use this opportunity to have a lot of spots to fill and build a police force that is reflective of the community. So the about 400 personnel, 37% are ethnic minorities, but just 7% live in Hartford. So it looks like they're trying to change that. So if you think you are qualified and live in Hartford and need a job, there you go. Meanwhile, the casino process seems to have supporters, but there will be problems along the way, as promises have been made when it comes to local tax revenues and jobs. $6 million in local tax revenues, jobs with benefits, and organizations that are in the area willing to invest in the local community. As the pitch was given in East Windsor. But the question is, how will they deal with traffic and crime? And as the fight goes on to defeat the MGM casino that will open in 2018 in Springfield. We don't have a final location yet. They don't have approval from the General Assembly. It would be the first casino in the state that is not on tribal land. And whether or not there's enough support for such legislation. Meanwhile, we talk about Connecticut's financial problems. And actually, somebody mentioned earlier cutting the funds for funerals for vets. Perhaps maybe this money, a portion of this money could go to it, although it doesn't seem to be. Connecticut getting $51.6 million. As part of the Volkswagen settlement, multi-billion-dollar settlement about its emissions cheating. That's on top of the $16 million it received last June. And the new money will be used for projects to cut air pollution in Connecticut, such as replacing or upgrading engines on buses and other equipment. And government and non-government organizations will be able to apply for funding under the program. Now, I'm not sure how they can allocate these funds and how they can move them around, but perhaps, just perhaps, we can take a couple of bucks from that $51.6 million and move it towards getting that funding back for the honor guards at our veterans' funerals. That's just my idea, but again, I don't know the inner workings, but we put people on the moon, we've got a rover on Mars, we can do anything, we just have to figure out how. Meanwhile, we talked about last week, there have been a lot of stories recently of people getting hit by cars, and roads in Connecticut not pedestrian-friendly. The Tri-State Transportation Campaign has named Route 1 the most dangerous road in Connecticut, and that's for the past 8 years. In 2016, there were 70-plus pedestrian-involved crashes occurring along Route 1. And University of Connecticut shows that 72 crashes in 2016, 5 were fatal, which was 3 more than 2015. And that's it's a lot of accidents. Do we just not put in, can't we just put in walkovers? Because I feel like what's happening is people are trying to cross four to six lanes of traffic. And then the other people aren't paying attention and don't see a person. I don't understand it. Meanwhile, Mary Tyler Moore was buried at a private funeral service yesterday in Fairfield at Oaklawn Cemetery. As, of course, we all know about the news of her death. And they had a small service. And then they had a private funeral at Oaklawn Cemetery. 888-574-2723 is the number. I want you to save that. Write it down. Share it with a friend. You can always use it to call in and talk about anything you want. And before we wrap up, last night was the SAG Awards. Mahershala Ali, you might know him from Luke Cage, House of Cards, and the movie Moonlight. He won Best Supporting Actor for his role in Moonlight, which is described as a timeless story of human self-discovery and connection as it follows the life of a young man from childhood to adulthood as he grows up in a rough neighborhood in Miami. And it's a drama, and I believe it's based on a play, yes, in Moonlight, Black Boys Look Blue. And his speech summed up something that in words better than I could. So I wanted to close out the show with these words from last night's SAG Awards from Mahershala Ali.
I think what I've learned from working on Moonlight is we see what happens when you persecute people. They fold into themselves. And what I was so grateful about in having the opportunity to play Juan was playing a gentleman who saw a young man folding into himself as a result of the persecution of his community, and taking that opportunity to uplift him and tell him that he mattered, that he was okay. I hope that we do a better job of that. Kind of get caught up in the minutia, the details that make us all different. I think there's two ways of seeing that. There's an opportunity to see the texture of that person, the characteristics that make them unique. And then there's an opportunity to go to war about it and to say that that person is different from me. And I don't like you, so let's battle. My mother is an ordained minister. I'm a Muslim. She didn't do backflips when I called her to tell her I converted 17 years ago. But I tell you now, we put things to the side, and I'm able to see her. She's able to see me. We love each other. The love has grown, and that stuff is minutia. It's not that important.